The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, good afternoon. Great to see you here. I wonder if you noticed in the news on Friday, there's a quite a significant court case was handed down. A quote from the Herald: In the federal court, Justice John Nicholas today in Sydney dismissed a 2010 lawsuit aimed to stop Myriad and Genetic Technologies from patenting a gene mutation associated with an increased risk of breast and ovarian cancer. And so the debate or the court case was brought by some cancer survivors saying it was wrong to patent the results of genetic research. And the company saying, well, it's our research, and the people bringing the case are saying, no, it's genetically occurring. And depending on which side of the debate you're sitting, the business people say, unless we can patent this, we won't be able to get shareholders and develop it. The people on the patient side are saying you may actually restrict availability of something that could be life-saving. And so the court said it could be patented. Now, I'm not a scientist. I just want you to use that as a springboard for something that's hypothetical but could be imagined, and that is imagine that one of these companies actually cracks it and finds the genetic solution to cancer. They come up with the miracle cure. But for various commercial reasons and so on, they're only going to do it through their clinic. Now, Genetic Technologies has the Australian distributor there in Melbourne. Imagine it's something like that. You imagine when they announce that they have a cure for cancer and it can only be done through their particular clinic in Melbourne, imagine what would happen. Well, they'd be mobbed, wouldn't they? There'd be arguments about controlling access to it, but there'd be queues of people lining up to attend the clinic. Money everywhere. They'd become famous. The share price would go through the roof and some people would become very rich and very famous, as well as doing a great deal of good. Okay, not hard to imagine. Take one step further. Imagine once they've been going for a while and things are in full swing that there's a sign on the door one morning that says, we've closed the clinic. And when the media officers track down, she says, we've closed the clinic. We've decided to go and do something more important, which is what? A cure for cancer? Saving lives? We've decided to go and do something more important, which is what could you possibly put in that gap? What could you do? Now, here's the strange thing. In this part of the Bible that we look at, Jesus makes exactly that decision. And what does he put in that gap? That's the question we're about to answer. Today's talk is about priorities. And you'll notice the title, okay, what's the number one, or, okay, God, what's the number one priority in my life? There are so many important things in life, aren't there? Well, so many things that keep us busy. Run. It's so busy and so many demands on our time. And what is it that really, really matters? What's the one, and what would God say? Or if you will allow us, what would Jesus say on behalf of God is the number one thing in our life? Well, let's have a look. The way that this part of the Bible works, or the way I'd like to walk you through it, is to show you three amazing things about Jesus. Three things that are just, whoa, about Jesus, and then let's talk priorities. I think it'll fall into place once we do that. So the first of the things I've had, you'll see on the program there, I've got three amazing things. That was just the amazing, astonishing, and so on. The first of the amazing things about Jesus, we see him as the teacher. See verse 21? They went to Capernaum, and when the Sabbath came, Jesus went into the synagogue and began to teach. I'll go through this quickly. Last week, I dealt with it in more detail. Mark paints Jesus as the teacher again and again and again. 17 times the word to teach is mentioned in Mark. 16 of them, Jesus is the subject of the verb. 11 times, Jesus is called teacher. It's the most common title that people give him. And the way he teaches, amazing. See, verse 22, the people were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one who had authority, not as the teachers of the law. When Jesus spoke, it was authoritative. Now, verses 22 to 28 are about Jesus dealing with evil spirits, with the demons and so on. I talked about it last week, and I'm more than happy to answer questions afterwards. I'm going to keep going, though. Okay? We dealt with it last week. More than happy to answer questions. Okay, first major point, Jesus, an amazing teacher. The way the gospel, this gospel is structured, Mark presents Jesus as the teacher in the first half and then gives you more of his content in the second half. Okay, second amazing point. Look at verse 29. A second amazing thing about Jesus. And just as we come to this, you may remember if you were here in the first week of this year, if not, let me tell you, Mark, who wrote this gospel, we know from the second century of Christians and so on, that Mark worked as, well, we know from the New Testament and the second century, that Mark worked as the Apostle Peter's secretary, PA, and so on. And Mark travelled with Peter, and Mark wrote this gospel through the eyes of the Apostle Peter. He heard Peter speak about Jesus again and again and again and so on. Mark wrote it down. And you can see here that as Peter, in Mark's gospel, he's referred to as Simon, or Simon Peter. He'll get the new name soon. As Simon Peter has followed Jesus, you can see this written through his eyes. See, verse 29, as soon as they left the synagogue, they went with James and John to the home of Simon Peter, and Andrew. Simon's mother-in-law was in bed with a fever, and they told Jesus about her. And you notice people in the first century, they could tell the difference between what's an evil spirit or whatever and what's sickness. She's just sick with a fever. Verse 31, so he went to her, took her hand and helped her up. The fever left her and she began to wait on them. Now she gets better immediately, you can tell, because she's immediately back into mother mode. And what's mothering mode? Ah, you boys must be hungry, okay? And so out comes the food and the... Okay. Second point, Jesus, an amazing healer. Now, you imagine if someone could heal that way today. Now, I still believe that God heals. All healing comes from God, whether that be through medicine and doctors or miraculously and so on. Sometimes today God chooses to do that. But imagine someone who could heal like Jesus, and that is with a touch of the hand or a spoken word, full, complete, immediate, as they chose. By the way, you might be wondering, if you're not used to the New Testament, you're unsure about all this, great that you're here. It's worth asking the question, can we prove that Jesus healed like that? That's a fair question. You're allowed to ask that question, okay? And the answer is, it depends what you mean by prove. Can we prove it in a mathematical, scientific sense? No, you can't repeat the events. What we can show is this is more like history and the law court and witnesses. And that is, you can show there's very good evidence that the people around Jesus believed that he could do this. And what's interesting is that his enemies believed it as well. So we've got other writings from Jewish leaders who hated him, called him a sorcerer, but they attributed these healings and so on to him. So it's the people around him saw this and wrote, and we're working on what the eyewitnesses said. So good evidence. Just come with me on it and see the implications. So you imagine if you could heal like that, bang, and you walk down to the local hospital, just walk into any ward and there's a lady there in the white jammies and stuff, and you say, would you like to get better? She says, yeah, and you heal and she's better, and then you do the next bed and the next bed. By the time you'd emptied a ward, what would happen? Well, exactly what happens here. You see, verse 32, that evening after sunset, the reason they wait till sunset is it was the Sabbath and they'd been taught they couldn't carry beds or burdens or whatever, couldn't carry people, so they wait till the Sabbath is over. Verse 32, that evening after sunset, the people brought to Jesus all the sick and demon-possessed. The whole town gathered at the door, and Jesus healed many who had various diseases. He also drove out many demons, but he did not let the demons speak because they knew who he was. The whole town gathered at the door. I bet they did. You know, it's very easy to take modern medicine for granted. Very easy. I like this quote from P.J. O'Rourke, who, he's just such a funny man. Like him or love him, he's funny. P.J. O'Rourke says this, in general, life is better than it ever has been. And if you think that, in the past, there was some golden age of pleasure and plenty to which you would, if you are able, transport yourself, let me say one single word, dentistry. Oh, he nails it, doesn't he? Uh-huh. You imagine living in a world where there were no proper hospitals. I made a little list here. A world where there were no antibiotics, no x-rays, no anaesthetics, no proper surgery, no orthopaedics, no proper dentistry, no cataract operations, no... That's the world that Jesus stepped into. Now, you imagine how much good that he could do, the healing of people and so on. Is it any wonder the whole town began to flock to him? So, amazing teacher, amazing healer, but the third one's actually the most amazing of all. See, beginning verse 35. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Now, why did he have to get up before sunrise? It's to get some time on his own, right? To get some private time. And he sneaks out in the dark out to what's literally actually a desert place where he prayed. Here's something interesting. If you're reading Mark's Gospel, if I lose you, I'll come back in a second. But here's something interesting. Jesus is only recorded as praying three times in Mark. Other Gospels talk about him praying constantly and some, but three times in Mark. Very significant. That's it. The second time is in chapter 6, just after he's fed 5,000 people with a cut lunch. And he sends the people away, goes up onto a mountain to pray. Why? When you read John's Gospel, John tells us the people saw him feed the crowd and they wanted to come and make him a king by force. They thought, wow, man, if you can do this, feed us, kick out the Romans, we're behind you. And Jesus takes a deep breath, prays, says no, and sends them away. The third time he prays is the night before he dies. He's in the Garden of Gethsemane, as it's called. He prays that he might be able to have the strength to do what needs to be done as he faces crucifixion. And the first time he prays is here in verse 35, the morning after healing the crowds. Why? What does he need to gather strength for here? He's Mr. Popularity. Everyone loves him. Why pray? Why be strengthened? Well, verse 36. Simon Peter, and his companions went to look for him. And when they found him, they exclaimed, "Everyone's looking for you." Bet they were. And you can hear Peter thinking, "Man, come on, like we've got breakfast going, we've got a cup of coffee for you. We're going to line up the people. You know, we get the people who are crippled here, and we're going to get the people with leprosy, line them up here. And we're going to do so much good." And in the back of Simon's head, he's thinking, "And we might just get rich and famous as well. Who knows? All right, maybe it's just me that would be thinking that." But I guarantee Simon Peter, I guarantee Simon's mouth dropped open. I guarantee it. When Jesus says what he says in verse 38, Jesus replied, "Let us go somewhere else, to the nearby villages, so I can preach there also. For that is why I have come." You've got people in the land of no hospitals, no antibiotics, no anaesthetics, queued up, and Jesus says, "I'm walking away." What? So he does, verse 39. So he travelled throughout Galilee, preaching in their synagogues and driving out demons. Third amazing thing about Jesus, his priorities. The most amazing thing of all, his priorities. He walked away from sick people to give a sermon. Now, is that because, have we got Jesus wrong? Does he kind of like lack compassion? No, and Mark's shaped his story to show us that. See the very next thing that Jesus does? It's about the story about the man with leprosy. Verse 40. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, "If you're willing, you can make me clean." Filled with compassion, and the compassion word, there's a special word. If you only know one Greek word, it's my favourite, splanknizomai. It actually means like your insides being squeezed. Okay, so Jesus looks at this man with leprosy, his insides are squeezed. And incidentally, that word's only ever used about Jesus in the Gospels. He has compassion on this man. And then he does something very strange. Has compassion. Jesus reached out his hand and what? Touched the man. The first human touch the man would have felt since he'd been diagnosed with leprosy. "I am willing," he said, "be clean." Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. Compassion, touches the leper, heals him. But then Jesus gives him a very strange, really a difficult instruction. Verse 43, Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them. In the Old Testament law, the priests were kind of the gatekeepers about health in the community as well. And if you were cured of leprosy, you'd come to the priest, show yourself that you're all, that you were sweet, and he'd say, okay, offer a sacrifice and so on, and then come back into normal life. And Jesus is saying, don't tell anybody, just let's keep it under the radar, go and just settle back in with the family and back to your village. Now, I think it's a pretty tough thing to do, really, because you imagine getting home and someone saying, so how are you, Bruce? I'm all right. Actually, you're looking great. Didn't you have leprosy? Well, yeah, I did. Man, what happened? I couldn't say. Well, maybe just to you. And no, in fact, Jesus is trying to avoid exactly what does happen. See verse 45. Instead, he went out and began to talk freely. And how can you blame him? Talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. What happened? He got mobbed by people who wanted to be healed. What he wanted to do, if you like, priority-wise, was to be able to go into the towns and preach and teach. Now, why are these strange priorities? The man who touches the leper and yet walks away from sick people, what drove his priorities? See, it's worth... You should definitely turn off your phone when you're the speaker. It's worth turning off your phone when you're the speaker, but let me tell you. It's worth trying to understand, why is it that Jesus healed? And just really quickly, kind of, I can give at least three reasons. The first reason is this: because he could. Someone comes, they're sick, he's compassionate, he's powerful, he heals. The second reason is because the Old Testament, kind of the first two-thirds of the Bible, the prophets there promised when the Messiah, God's great king, came along, he would do things that no one else could do. You know, the lame would walk and the blind would see and the deaf would hear. And the reason that the Messiah, God's great king, would do that is, the third reason, it's kind of a foretaste or a glimpse or almost kind of the movie trailer of the future. When God promises to renew creation and there'll be no more mourning or crying or pain, and Jesus is saying, you want to see what the kingdom of God looks like when it really arrives? Watch this. And he's showing us. But as important as healing is, and you can see Jesus has compassion, as important as it is, it doesn't address people's number one problem. It doesn't address our greatest problem, and that is this: that we have walked away from God, who is the source of life. And if we keep walking away and we stay alienated from God, we'll end up in an eternity without him, without hope. And Jesus could see that. And Jesus sees so clearly that we desperately need the news of forgiveness and peace with God, even more important than being healed. And so it's actually Jesus' compassion. Isn't it interesting? It's his compassion for people that made him walk away from healing to go and preach. But why get up before sunrise and pray and kind of gather strength? And what was so tough about that? The answer is this: they don't crucify healers. But he knew he'd be crucified for the message that he preached, particularly the message about himself and who he is. And if you like, the decision that Jesus makes happens against the backdrop of eternity. What everything that Jesus teaches, preaches, does, happens with a view to eternity. And put simply, the decision he made that morning put him inevitably on a path to die on a cross to win forgiveness for us so that we can be offered free forgiveness. There's Jesus, the three amazing things about him: amazing teacher, amazing healer, amazing priorities. Now, I said at the end we'd talk about our priorities. There's lots of really good and important things in life, isn't it? It's kind of a no-brainer. So many good and important things. Our careers, you've got to put bread on the table, have a job you enjoy, that's important. Owning your own house, to get the mortgage under control, to enjoy fashion, fitness, travel, all those are really good things. But they all pale beside something else, don't they? Career, fashion, travel, all pale beside our health. Really. To chase all of those other things and wreck your health, that's crazy. And so our health really is a huge priority. And yet Jesus says our health is not nearly as important as hearing the message that he brings. A message of knowing God and forgiveness and the promise of eternal life. And next week we'll see in chapter 2 that Jesus drives that home at a personal, individual level and uses one man to show how that applies to people. Stephen Covey, who wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, unfortunately was killed in a bike accident, I think it was, last year. Stephen Covey is always on about, in his books, you've got to be able to separate out the important from the urgent. The important from the urgent. Or the urgent will overwhelm you and you'll never get to what's important. And folks, don't we get distracted from what really matters? We get distracted with, whether it's career or work or chasing the big dollars or whatever. To do all of that and let your health suffer, you'd say, oh, that's crazy thinking. Or to get caught up with other things and neglect the relationships that really matter in life, family and so on. You say, oh, that's crazy short-term thinking. But Jesus is saying, have an even longer view. I've got a mate who's done very well in the business world, and he's got a few sayings that he has. One of them is this: always play the long game. Always play the long game. And that's what Jesus is saying. If you want to really understand the number one priority in life, look past the next few years and look into eternity, and you'll see what really matters. And life is very short, and there are many distractions. And the number one thing, where do you stand with your Creator, and have you found forgiveness, and do you have the promise of eternal life? Have you heard that message that Jesus decided to preach that morning?
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.